have to be doing something with your money more than just having it sit in a checking account. You're setting yourself up for so much more success.
Hi, I'm Cynthia Cortman Westfall, a Broadway music director, voice coach, and tenured professor in the musical theater department at the University of Michigan.
And I'm Chelsea Wilson, a performer turned voice teacher to Broadway stars and vocal coach on Broadway productions like The Phantom of the Opera, School of Rock, and more.
Here on the Broadway Vocal Coach podcast, you can expect real talk about the business, practical advice, and constant encouragement.
We believe there's space for every artist in this industry. All you need is the right support. So consider us your two-woman hype team. Welcome to the Broadway Vocal Coach podcast, where we help musical theater performers get unstuck and take the next step in their careers.
Hi, everyone. We are welcoming Kyle Timpson to the podcast today. I am so excited to have Kyle on with us today. We're going to talk all about money. Oh, and finances and what Kyle would call financial literacy in the performing arts industry, which is actually a little mini passion of mine, too. I feel this is just really, really important. So I'm super glad we're talking about this. Welcome, Kyle.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. This is so fun for me.
Let me just share a little about Kyle. He is a Long Island native and proud graduate of the University of Michigan. He's currently touring as the dance captain and male swing on the North American tour of Les Mis. And before that was previously seen as Shrek in the international tour of Shrek the Musical. And beyond performing, as I mentioned, Kyle has made it his mission to improve financial literacy in the performing arts industry. And I love this, is available for teaching classes and personal coachings. Highly recommend. So, Kyle, I wanted to share with you two little anecdotes that have just sort of been impactful to me in my own financial literacy journey. One is I made a super smart decision, which I didn't really realize at the time, but I did make a smart decision when I first started out in this business. I grew up with not a lot of money. I had to pay for all of my college and my master's completely on my own. I ended up, as you can all imagine, in a ton of debt through some other unfortunate decisions, ended up in even more debt and to the point where I was just really angry about the debt, like really, really angry. And when I got my very first big job, which was Lion King, I continued to live on zero money. I lived as if I'd been living all those other years where I had no money. And I paid off over $60,000 in debt in that first year that I had Lion King. That being said, I had no fun. I wasn't going out to eat. I wasn't buying any clothes. I wasn't, you know, I was doing nothing that would have been sort of fun for having booked your first big Broadway show. But I did it sort of out of spite and out of anger, like, I'm never going to be in debt again. As God is my witness. I was very Scarlett O'Hara, like, I'll never be in debt again. And, you know, in retrospect, that was a super smart decision. At the time, I had a lot of people saying to me, you should have some fun. You're making good money. Like, go out and have some fun. But I was really happy I made that decision. Maybe there would have been a balanced way to do it, but I want to talk to you about that. And if I can keep monopolizing the conversation for one more second,
please,
I want to
do.
Tell one more story that really stuck with me. And then I want to just put all of this back to you. While I was on another Broadway show, we had hired somebody who I was working with putting in the show, was putting them into the show. It was pretty clear right from the beginning that it was not the right fit. So within days of this person coming to start rehearsing, it was really clear that they were not going to be the right fit for this role. And I had already been told by the producers, we're going to end their contract at 6 months. We just need to get them through these 6 months. And so one of the first rehearsals this person came into my studio with when I was teaching them the vocals was like decked out in what I can only term as a ultra expensive looking outfit, head to toe, shoes, hat, jacket, yes, the whole shebang. And I was like, oh, no. You know, I'm just thinking to myself, you aren't going to have a job in 6 months. And I thought, I have to say something. I was like, wow, you've bought some new things. And she's like, yeah, I mean, you know, I've got this paycheck now. And my friends are like, start spending it, have some fun. And I was like, yes. And you know, it's a fickle business. You never know what's going to happen. And, you know, consider saving some too. And I couldn't tell her what I knew was coming down the pike for her. But those two things for me have really stuck with me my whole over 30 years of like two different ways of approaching this actor business where it's sort of either feast or famine. You might be on a great contract. You might be on no contract. And with that, Kyle, teach us everything. Make us financially literate. Go.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny. I think financial literacy, right? What does that mean? You know, really what it means is just having a basic understanding of some of these principles, you know, saving, the best way to pay off debt. If I have a bit of money, where should it be working its hardest for me on its, you know, in some account somewhere, those types of things, they're super simple. But I think the problem sort of overarching in our society, but also in the performing arts industry is that we don't talk about these things, right? We're conditioned from a really young age not to talk about money. Some people have great relationships with their parents and they talk about it, but a lot of people don't. We don't talk about money in this house, right? Like that type of environment. And then we get to college and we went through 4 years of college training to be professional actors. But the what do you do when you're actually making the money as a professional actor? And how does one like view retirement when you're an actor? You know, all of those types of things, they don't really come up because you're young and you're focused on honing your craft, which is really what it should be about. But I do think there's this little extra piece that would be helpful for people. And so I came out of college and I didn't know anything about any of this. And I did Shrek and was making a decent paycheck and didn't really know anything about any of this. And then I got the Les Mis tour when I was 23. And I started getting asked questions like, what do you want your 401k contribution to be? And, you know, here's your health weeks, you're starting on this. And I started hearing people talk about a pension and I just went, oh my gosh, I have no clue what any of this means, what any of this is. And I really don't like being ignorant to a topic when it's being, you know, that's sort of like one of my things. I'm like, let me go read about this. And I just started diving in and I read a ton of books and did a ton of research and sort of got my own act together. And then as I got older and older, I'm still doing Les Mis, right? 8 years later or whatever. And as I've become more of the seasoned veteran and I'm seeing people who are 23, 22 coming in from schools, I'm noticing that they have the same issues. And when you are an actor and you can get a touring job or a Broadway job, anything like that, you know, you're making a good living. And my mission is to make sure that when people do those things, that they are making the most of it. Is essentially like my mantra and my mission. And I want everyone to be maximizing every last penny they get out of it. Because you're right, these jobs are fleeting. And I was on Les Mis and thought I had 2 or 3 more years left to accrue money and do what I wanted to do. And then COVID happened, right? And not even my show closing because it was closing or me getting fired or leaving, everything closed, right? So it's being prepared for those moments. And I think also thinking about the future, because when you're a 25, 22-year-old actor, it's hard to think about, well, what is it going to look like when I'm 65 if I do continue to run and work in this industry? So
it sounds like we've got sort of 3 buckets we want to talk about. We've got the what do you do when you book a good paying job? You know, you get on a really great contract, a Broadway show or a long-running regional production or a national tour. We've got the bucket of what do you do when you've got a day job or a survival job, you're making some money, but certainly not as much as you hope. And then finally, like, what do you do with the debt? Because a lot of actors and musicians are coming out of school with a substantial amount of debt. So what's the first thing you would like to tell everybody?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. This is the first thing that I start with in any of my classes, in any of my coachings. It's the simplest thing to do. And it really is the base of any stage, any of those 3 buckets you're in. I think that everyone should like go look at what they're doing here and make a change if they're not doing necessarily what could be working best for them. And that is just, where do you bank? Where do you have your checking and your savings account, right? Because there are 1,000 different banks out there. And I find that most people are just using whatever bank was closest to the house where they grew up when they were in high school, and they've just kept it. And that's just what we're doing, right? And I think from a checking account standpoint, sure, if you love your Bank of America checking account or your Chase or your PNC or whatever that bank happens to be for you, if you like your checking account, that's great. Because really, all the checking account should be is a place where your money that you're making comes into, and then all of your dollars should come out from, right? So you should be paying things from there, you should be saving from there, you should be, you know, debt, credit cards, you know, those types of things. But really, that's all it should be. So my number one thing is that if you have any more money than what you need to pay your bills sitting in your checking account, first of all, we've got to get it out of there. You have to be doing something with your money more than just having it sit in a checking account. And the reason behind this, and I'm going to make the math super simple for people, is that what we're constantly trying to do with our money is beat inflation. So we hear this term all the time. What does it mean? Basically, inflation means that every single year, the price of everything around us goes up a little bit, right? So the average over time inflation rate is 3%. So constantly, as the years go on and on and on, rent and food and groceries and gas and all of these things, they increase in how much they cost, right? You hear about this all the time. Gas used to cost 25 cents in my day, that type of thing, right? And it's true. So we're trying to beat that 3% rise in inflation. And the perfect example of it is that if you had $10,000 in cash sitting in a shoebox underneath your mattress on January 1st, 2024, on January 1st, 2025, that $10,000 is only worth $9,700. Because it decreases in that 3% value, right? So the inflation is what we're always going to be trying to beat with any type of thing, your savings account, your emergency fund, your retirement accounts, anything like this. That is the main component that we're trying to understand. And so when you look at what is your savings account rate offering you, the simple question is, am I beating inflation or not? Because if you're going to have money sitting somewhere, even if it's $500, you want it sitting somewhere where it's going to be beating that inflation rate and not decreasing in value. You work so hard for that $500. Don't let it go down 3% every year, right? So I have a few banks listed here, and there are so many bank options in both directions. But essentially, what I find is that the banks that are brick and mortar, the banks like a Bank of America or Chase or Wells Fargo, that they have a location on every corner and you can walk into them, their savings rates are extremely low, because if you think about it, they have to pay for all those brick and mortar locations. That's why they're called brick and mortar banks. So they're paying rent to have all those Chases on all the corners or Bank of America's on all the corners. And so they can't offer you as much money, right? So there are all of these banks out there that would be classified under something called an online bank. So an Ally or a Capital One, right? Or a lot of investment firms that don't necessarily have a street corner store, but offer you all of the same things that you're getting from your normal bank, right? And their savings rates are so much ridiculously higher than everything else that I just am going to implore everyone to think about switching. So just some of them, I'm just going to name a few of them. The savings account rate at Bank of America and Chase right now is 0.01%.
That is a crime.
You're trying to beat 3%. And how many people do you think are still using their Bank of America Chase savings accounts? Wells Fargo's the other one I have. They're doing a little bit better. They've got 0.25%. But remember, we're trying to beat 3% on inflation. So that, the brick and mortar banks, right, versus online banks, right? So the two examples I have are Ally and Capital One. There are tons of options out there. I'm not a rep for Ally or Capital One, but just using them as an example. The interest rate at Ally and Capital One, when I looked up these rates, I think it was a month or two ago, was 4.35%. So you are beating inflation by 1.35% at one of those places, and you are literally losing money at the other ones. And some really quick math for people to, so people really understand the difference. If you had $500, that's it, just 500 bucks, and you put them in a Bank of America savings account for a full year at 0.01%, you would have earned 5 cents in interest. You'd have $500 and 5 cents. But if you put it in an Ally or Capital One savings account at 4.35%, you'd have $522.05. So 5 cents versus $22. And that's not the craziest difference, right? But it's because the number I'm using is super low. $500 isn't a ton of money in the grand scheme of things, but $22 versus 5 cents, that's a no-brainer, people. We got to get out here and we got to switch these around. If you wanted a bigger example, if you put $10,000 in both accounts and you let it sit there for just 1 year, at the end of 1 year, you'd have $1. So $10,001 at the end of 1 year. But if you put that same $10,000 in an Ally or a Capital One at the end of 1 year, you'd have $445. So when we're talking about beating inflation and all those things, please, even if you are working at a gym or a bar or you've got the survival job and you're not saving a ton of money, but you have just a little socked away, please think about going home and making a change. If you want to keep your checking account with Bank of America or Chase or whatever it is because you feel like you've got the longevity with them or whatever, that's fine. But just don't save any money there. Please get it out of there. Pick an online bank. It doesn't matter which one. They're all FDIC insured. So the government is going to insure your money. They've got all the same protections as the brick and mortar banks. You got to do it. So anyway, that's a long sort of like mantra, but that, I mean, the way that people's eyes explode when I lay
my
out
eyes are exploding,
out,
Kyle. Exploding. Seriously, you've blown my mind with those numbers.
Oh my gosh.
Also, when you were like, this is the number one thing I say, like this was totally not what I was expecting you to say. I was like,
me either.
Number one thing's got to be like save 5% of what you make, but like literally just where your money is. Also, I'm really proud of myself because I do this. My savings is at Capital One. So I'm like patting myself on the back right now. Like, yes, I'm doing one good thing.
Wow.
I love it.
And what I'm realizing is we're at a credit union. I don't have any idea. I have zero idea of how much percentage we're making on that savings. No idea.
Yeah. The credit unions can go sort of either way is what I found. I don't always bring them up, but people always ask because someone's with the Actors, you know, the Actors Equity has a federal credit union and their savings rate is quite good. The truth is I don't care what bank it is. What you want to do is a great place to go. If you want somewhere to go is bankrate.com. You can type in savings account, put your zip code in, and you can see sort of like what the general rate is that most people are offering. There are other places out there that are offering 5% right now. You know, I'm not an advocate of chasing around the 0.1% difference as banks offer different rates, right? It's all going to be slightly different. But as long as you're getting the market value of, you know, basically what everyone's offering, you're setting yourself up for so much more success.
I love that tip. It's such an actionable tip, regardless of how much money you have and regardless of how much money you're bringing in at any given time. That's really great. Mm-hmm. That is great.
Yeah.
So what are some of the other big challenges that actors face when it comes to money and finances? And what are some other actionable things that people can do that won't seem too overwhelming as we get started?
Yeah, I have a few. And the crazy thing is we're talking about the three different buckets, right? The three different stages. And actually, I think 90% of personal finance is actually all the same stuff. It just is going to be a different amount of money that you're able to accrue in these places, right? So I think the number one thing, right, everyone should switch their savings account over. I think the second thing that everyone should start thinking about doing is scrounging together whatever they can for a small to a large emergency fund, right? So I call this, you know, the like, oops, I wasn't expecting that fund, right? But things come up and they come up in all stages of life. You're working that survival job. You're on a big Broadway national tour. You're on Broadway. These types of things come up all the time. And essentially what an emergency fund is it a savings account at one of those banks that we just talked about, where you have some amount of money put away so that you can cover an expense that you weren't expecting. I need my car to get to work and the tire just broke and I need $300 for a new tire, or something that we see on tour sometimes, right? I'm on tour, I'm making all this money, I'm totally fine. Oops, I just slipped off the barricade and broke my leg, and now I'm out of the show for 6 months. And my income, while you're getting workers' comp, is drastically decreased. And now I need to go rent an apartment because I don't have anywhere to live because I'm on tour, right? Like, it happens at all stages of life and all stages of working in this industry. And I think especially in this industry, when things are so irregular and things are so sort of like, I've got this job for 3 months and then I'm hoping to bridge the gap between the next job for 3 months, whatever it is, you just want to have something socked away. And even if it isn't like a, oh, my tire broke or something, even if it's just, oh, I didn't get that in-between job and so I need rent for this 6 week period, but I can't, 6 weeks isn't long enough to get a serving job, so I can't really work. And, you know, it's to cover those types of things. So the general recommendation for an emergency fund is 3 to 6 months of expenses, right? So you want to look at what's my rent, my utilities, my grocery bill, and maybe your like metro, you know, your monthly on the metro, you know, if you're taking the subway every day, and you want to say, what's that for a month, and then multiply it by 3 or 6. Now in New York, that can be a huge amount of money. You know, so not everyone, especially if you're in bucket number one, is going to be able to save that much money. But I do think that even having $500 or $1,000, just something tangible that you say, okay, if sort of anything kind of like the flat tire type thing happened to me, I wouldn't completely be bankrupt and just putting things on credit cards. I have a little bit of money. And I think as you're working, as you're earning money, you obviously want to be at least paying your minimum payments on all debts. But I think just working towards with whatever income you have after that, that you're not spending on groceries and stuff, you should be thinking about, can some of this go into a fund where I have some backup? The next thing is definitely the emergency fund. And if you are working, if now let's go to bucket number 2 or 3, if you are working on a Broadway show or a tour or even a long running regional job and you're making good money and you maybe don't have as many debts to pay, work towards that 3 to 6 months. You are going to feel so much better walking through life with 6 months of your bills paid and a savings account that you don't even think about, that if you're earning that 4.35%, is still continuing to go up and earn money for you, just passively earning money for you, you're going to feel so much better.
So let me ask you this, because I love that. I have that myself. But I remember back in my younger days, you know, after I sort of got out of the debt, it took me a while to get to a point where I built up that emergency fund. And one of the barriers I hear from a lot of people is that, well, I am living paycheck to paycheck, if I'm even lucky enough to break even. And one of the things I grew up with my dad was this idea of like, even if it's $5 a month, $10 a month, like even the tiniest bit, keep putting it towards it because it will add up over time. So what I was going to say is one of the barriers are here of a lot of people starting out who have survival jobs and are really going paycheck to paycheck is like, well, I can't possibly fund an emergency fund right now. I can't possibly put $500 into my emergency fund. So I'm going to wait until I get a higher paying job. But talk to us about like, is there benefit to like putting $5 a month or $10 a month? What would you say to someone who really can't fund that oh crap account all in one fell swoop?
Totally. I think I really caution myself unless I'm working with someone one-on-one to sort of delve into, well, what sort of lifestyle are they living, right? So, you know, I think in New York City, they say, right, you can't walk outside without spending $20. And it really is true, right? But I have heard stories, you know, and like yours, Cynthia, right, where there's always, I find, especially in New York, there's always some room in there, right, to find a little bit of extra dough. Is it making your coffee at home? Is it, you know, not going to drinks 3 nights a week, but only going to drinks 1 night a week, right? I never tell people not to have fun. I don't think that people will stick to things if they're completely miserable. Not everyone has the constitution, like you, Cynthia, to just be completely a hermit for a year and just work through it. That's a great way to get out of debt and to do those types of things. But, you know, there is always, I think, a little room. But for sure, right, if you could save $10 a week, right, that's not even 2 coffees in New York at this point. You could save $10 a week. That's $40 a month. Times 12, right? All of a sudden, that's hundreds of dollars. You've got hundreds of dollars. In 2 years, you could have that $1,000 sort of shoot for this at first emergency fund that I was talking about. Yeah, now obviously it's not going to come quickly. It's going to be a long process, but at least you've got something in there. And I think incrementally just working towards it 100% is the way to go. And I think looking at other things like, can you be doing the teeniest, tiniest bit for retirement? Are you putting everything into your debt, right? Are you not just paying the minimum payments? Can you come up with a little extra to be paying towards those debts to get them paid down? Like those types of things are, I think, every little bit helps, every little bit amount. And if you say to yourself, well, I can't come up with $200 a week, so it's not worth doing, then all of a sudden that $10 you're just maybe spending on coffees or drinks and not thinking about what it could be doing for you. And like we said, with rates at savings accounts right now beating inflation, even just keeping it in your bank account, it's literally making you money. You know, the emergency fund, every month it sits there, is just earning you money. So you have to think about what those dollars could be doing for you, for sure.
Mm-hmm. It also feels to me like it's a habit, you know, like it's a muscle to be flexed. Like even if it's the $10 a week, like you're saying, to me, there's value in, okay, I'm developing the discipline to put even that much away. And over time, that does feel really valuable. Just the discipline of I pay myself first, right? I put something into my savings first. And even that I think is worth it.
Yeah. And I think another thing that sort of applies to all of these principles and also applies to each bucket, no matter which bucket you're in, is these days it's really easy to automate this stuff. So you could go on to that Capital One savings account and you could say every week on Monday, take $10 out of my checking account, right? And so then you're getting paid, you're making your money, and every Monday, it's just automatically being swept away. And ask yourself at the end of that week, am I in the negatives? Can I really not afford to give up that $10? Or if that gets sucked out at Monday, do you even really notice that it's not there, right? I think for all of these things, for emergency funds, for debt payments, for retirement, for all those things, automating is your friend. And everyone will say that because the psychology of the money is, if on Monday, when I look at my checking account and I say, how much do I have for the week? If it's not there, you don't think about it. You don't think about it being gone. So, yeah.
Right. Oh, I love that. Yeah. Got a lot of things automated for that very reason, because I know I don't do it if otherwise. But when it's automated, I don't really even notice it, that it's gone. But I notice it's accruing as I, you know, that's such a great tip. Let's get into the really yucky part of there's a lot of folks who get out of school with a ton of debt. What are some tips or advice or thoughts you have for how to manage that?
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy, right? And everyone's debt is for a different reason. And I get with people who are really embarrassed that they have debt for all sorts of different reasons they've got debt. And some of them, I will admit, are sillier than other reasons to be in debt. And I think at the end of the day, though, you can't change the past. You've just got to say, okay, this is the situation I'm in. And I think with most actors, most of it's student loans, you know, right? So I've got this student loan debt. I've got this degree. I wanted the degree. I'm going to try and, you know, work with this degree. That's great, right? Eventually, I think a lot of the people who have been able to make that money out of performing are glad that they have that degree that got them that great paying job, right? So, you know, I think forgive yourself no matter what the debt is for, and then come up with a plan to start working towards it. So first of all, you have to always be making your minimum payments. That is like the number one thing. If you start getting behind on minimum payments, it ruins your credit. It can really get you into a sticky situation. And so if you are in a situation where you aren't able to make the minimum payments, that's where I say something's got to change, right? You've got to start working more hours, or you've got to go to a different living situation where you're paying less a month in rent, or whatever it is. You've got to do something to be at least making those minimum payments, because it could ruin your life to be skipping those. So that's number one. You've always got to be making your minimums everywhere. I think the second thing is, right, you want to be contributing money towards those debts. I am a big proponent of paying them off as fast as you can. Student loan debt, you start to get into, well, are they going to forgive some of this, right? I start to get some pushback on, well, you know, is this going to get forgiven? I think at the end of the day, what you really have to do is look at your interest rate, right? So we're talking about 3% for inflation. And we're talking about, if I put money in a savings account, I can earn 4.35%. So, you know, someone could argue that, let's say your student loan rate payment is, your interest on your student loans is 2%, right? You can make an argument that making the minimum payment and then putting whatever extra money you do have left over into the savings account is actually better. It's going to earn you more money. I do think that there's some danger to that, right? I think that the debt looming over your head, you're going to feel better if it's gone, but there is some argument. The problem is that most of these things have much higher interest rates than that, right? So first of all, credit card debt. Credit card debt is astronomical. The rates on credit cards are anywhere from 18 to 30% interest. We're talking about 4.5 from the savings account. So that's crazy. And then I think other debts tend to fall sort of in the middle there. There's two sort of methodologies to paying off debt. There's what's called the debt avalanche, and then there's what's called the debt snowball. And so really basically is that debt avalanche says, which to me makes the most sense, I'll preface it, is it says by the numbers, what you want to do is make your minimum payments on all debts, and then every dollar extra you have should go towards the debt with the highest interest, right? Because the interest rates on, let's say you've got credit card debt and a student loan payment, the credit card debt is going to be costing you way more money just sitting there because of the higher interest rate. So try and pay that down first. You get as much money you can into that and you pay that off. And then you can take the minimum payment from the credit card and all that extra cash. And now you can put it towards the student loan debt that's costing you way less in interest just sitting there. So that's sort of the avalanche. And from a interest rate, how much money are you losing on interest over the time of paying off your debt? That's what makes up the most sense math-wise. There is something to be said about the debt snowball method, which is essentially what they say is they say list your debts from the lowest balance to the highest balance. So if you've got one student loan debt that's $2,000 and one student loan debt that's $15,000, and then you've got 20 on a credit card or something like that, right? They say start at the smallest one. So you're making your minimum payments on all of them, but you're putting as much of your extra dollars as you can afford towards the smallest debt. And the reasoning behind that is because from a psychology standpoint, seeing that number get lower and closer to zero faster, and then seeing, let's say, that $2,000 debt get paid off in the first 4 or 5 months, right, can really inspire you to go on to the next one and to keep with it. Sometimes it's really hard if your highest interest rate debt over here is $60,000 in one big student loan. It's hard to stick with it when it doesn't really feel like you're getting much closer to zero. So there is they've done some research and they've said psychologically it can make a big difference to pay the smaller debt first and feel like you're snowballing down the hill, is why they call it that. You're snowballing down the hill and paying off debts. I think that if you know yourself and you know you've got the discipline, math person in me says go over here to the avalanche and just start, especially that credit card debt, just try as hard as you can to get rid of it because the interest rate is so high. But if you're like, it's just so hard for me to stay on a plan, that type of thing, you might want to think about the debt snowball. I think at the end of the day, like you said at the beginning, Chelsea, with all of these things, just doing something is the most important part. 80% of getting your personal finance in order is just deciding I'm going to sit down and do something today.
I totally agree with that. My husband and I did this recently and we're like, you know, we're not newly graduated. We're adults with 2 children. I don't know if that makes you an adult, but I don't know. I'm feeling like I'm adulting a lot lately. Anyways, we just sat down and like, again, like we're in the middle of life and lots of payments and paying for kids and all these things. We just made a spreadsheet. Like, what are we paying things on? What are our savings goals for the year? And even just that simple act of like, just looking at what numbers are in which accounts, right? And what's our goal for the end of the year? What do we want to have in these accounts? Makes me feel like, oh, I did something for my personal finances today just because I know where I'm at and I have a plan for where I want to get to. So I think these are such practical tips. I really appreciate that, Kyle.
Yeah, I think, right, with credit score and how much debt do I have and all those things. Yeah, pulling back the curtain and really just forcing yourself to sit and look at it is a huge step, inspiring you to come with a plan. And the finance books will say, pour yourself a glass of wine and sit down, right? You know, and it's like, yeah, whatever you have to do to sort of ease into it if you're stressed about it. But you do, you've got to rip the Band-Aid off and start looking at it. I think I just for debt, I'll talk about the other buckets just for a second, because I do always want to be conscious of the people who aren't on tour, aren't on Broadway and are just working that survival job and trying to make pennies into dollars and all of those things. But I do just want to say for all of my people out there who are on tour, who are on Broadway, who are making a decent living, I can't say how important I think it is, how much of a gift it can be to try and work yourself out of debt, just like Cynthia did. We have a guy on our tour who on the first year and a half paid off $100,000 in student loan debt. And when I say this, I really do mean it. Like, that's debt you die with. Student loan debt is not forgiven. The government forgives it, but student loan debt passes on to your relatives. Student loan debt passes down to your kids if you've got them. And there are people, thousands and thousands of people in our country who have $100,000 in student loan who will never pay it all the way off. And to be given a gift, especially I think on tour where you don't have living expenses, to be given the kind of gift to just say, I'm just going to toss every dollar I'm making at this debt and get out of it. I mean, he would have been paying that debt off for 40 more years if it weren't. And yes, is he fortunate that he got this job that pays well? Of course. And you have to be grateful. But I find that some people do get those jobs and they don't necessarily see the gift and the possibility that could come from it. And they're not as focused as they maybe could be. And that's especially being out on tour and interacting with a lot of people who are on other tours and that type of thing. That's like a big thing that I see. And I'm just like, please, 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 you could leave here completely debt free and never have to worry about that ever again. And I think just what you said, Cynthia, is how incredibly gratifying is that feeling. And, you know, at the end of the day, what did it cost you? It cost you 1 year of keeping your head down, that type of thing. So,
yeah.
Moving into that space, I'd love to hear, you know, a little bit about what you suggest for people who are making a great living, making a living performing, making a living at their survival job. Retirement for actors. We don't have one employer for 40 years. So how do you suggest that people think about different things like a Roth IRA account, a retirement account, 401k? What do you advise folks about that?
Yeah, I think that this is the one that just completely blows people's tops off when you start to talk about it, right? Because when you're a 21-year-old, you know, kid who's in BFA school and you just want to get to New York and be on Broadway, and then someone looks you in the eyes and says, "Where do you see yourself at 65?" They just go, you know, it's so hard. It's the immediacy of our industry, you know, how fleeting it can be. It's really hard to see yourself retiring, but at the end of the day, you go to school to become an actor so that you can work as an actor, and people go to work and work towards one day not having to work anymore, right? It's part of the lineage of society, at least as it's currently structured, right? That's part of it. And so to not think about the final step is, I think, a little short-sighted, especially because when you're young, interest. So this is the concept of compound interest, right? Compound interest can make such a life-changing difference from you if you can get even a few dollars into something when you're young as opposed to when you're older. Because the idea is with compound interest, if I put money in a jar and it's earning interest, the first year it earns this much, but then for the second year, you start out with this money in the jar. And so then by year two, you've earned this much because you're making money off that interest as well as the money you put in. And then year three, you're making money off of all of this, right? So then it grows even further. And if you think about saving money for retirement, which is money that we're not going to touch until we're in our 60s, that type of thing, the amount of time to have that interest compounding on itself for a 20-year-old is astronomical compared to someone who's, you know, maybe closer to 60. So it can make a huge difference to even just be thinking about saving a little bit amount of money when you're younger. So I think from an equity standpoint, if you're a working actor, the union provides you with a 401k. So the second that you get an equity job that has a 401k payment, the union does this for you. They set you up with a 401k, and then you can set your contributions with your employer, whoever it happens to be, and you can start contributing to that 401k. And so a 401k is great. Let's talk about that. You've got the union 401k. Basically, the government wants people saving for retirement. They don't want people forgetting about it. So they've given some tax advantages to people to say, please save for retirement. We want you thinking about this. We're gonna give you a deal. And so the way that a 401k works is that you put money into the 401k tax-free. So let's say you're in Wicked on Broadway and your paycheck is coming in pre-tax, right? This is how much money you make pre-tax. We only ever see it in our bank account post-tax. But before they tax it, you can take money tax-free out of here and put it into your 401k and let it grow for however many years it takes to reach 65. And then when you pull it out, you do have to pay taxes on it, right? Tax deferred is what it's called. And you can basically save on the taxes now. And why that's really important is because of that compound interest, right? So as you're working towards compounding that interest, it's going to make a huge difference for you. Here's the example, right? So let's say it's $100. So you've got $100 pre-tax. And you put it into an account. I assumed 8% interest, and we can get into that. But, you know, generally, the stock market and that type of thing over a long period of time makes 8%. That $100, when you turn 65, if you put $100 in at 25 and you didn't put any more money in, just $100, and you let it grow, when you turn 65, that money is worth $2,452, right? So if you paid taxes on that money and you only had $75 to start at 25, when you hit 65, that money's only worth $1,839. So the idea of that compound interest is that extra $25 that you get to start out with, the amount of money compounding over time, that extra $25 you save by not paying taxes up front, makes you money as it goes and goes and goes. And that's why it's an advantage. So as you start to work on these jobs, contributing to that 401k is a great way to start saving for retirement because you're saving on those taxes. Also, another thing is that when you're on a high paying job, like let's say you are on Wicked on Broadway, right? The Broadway minimum is like $2,400. So I'm not talking about anyone's particular paycheck, but anyone on Broadway is making $2,400 a week, right? You're earning a six-figure salary. And what do people complain about who make a lot of money? They complain about paying a lot of taxes on it, right? This is a great way to sort of avoid paying those taxes while you're a high earner, because as the amount of money you make per year goes up, your tax bracket changes. You have to pay more and more taxes, right? And so you're able to save on some of that by saying, you know what, don't tax me at this super high rate right now while I'm making a ton of money. Let's just take some of that money out and let's put it in this 401k and I'll pay the taxes later when maybe I'm retired and maybe I'm not earning, you know, $100,000 a year from an income base or something like that. So it's a really great way to sort of lower your tax burden when you're making a decent amount of money, and also a great way to save for retirement. And I'll just get into, I have some stats on saving early, right? Because this is what I get into is you get a 22-year-old or a 23-year-old and they say, well, I have so much time to save for retirement. And really, what's the point of saving right now? And with that compound interest, this is the difference that it makes. So when you contribute to a 401k, this is how much you need to save per month to have $1 million when you retire, right? So maybe not everyone's going to achieve this goal, that type of thing. But if you want to have $1 million in your 401k when you retire at 65, this is how much you have to contribute monthly by age, right? So when you're 20, $361 a month gets you to $1 million by 65. That is a lot of money if you're in bucket number one. And we can talk about things that bucket number one can do. But when you're talking about buckets two and three, when you're making a six-figure salary or whatever it is, even if you're on tour and you're not making quite six figures, you're making a little under that, but you don't have living expenses, right? $361 a month is achievable. You know, I do think it's achievable for everybody to be putting that much money in, right? So let's talk about what happens if you say, you know what, though, I'm 20, I'm young, I don't need to be thinking about this. Well, let's look at someone like me. I'm 30 years old. So if I had nothing in retirement and I wanted to save for $1 million in retirement right now at 30, I would need $698 a month to get to the same place that that 20-year-old could have gotten to, right? So more than double a month, every single month, what a 20-year-old needs to a 30-year-old. Let's go into a little bit even higher. So let's go up to 50. For a 50-year-old, let's say you're just working and you're not thinking about it and you get to 50 and you say, oh, shoot, I really want to retire with $1 million. A 50-year-old would need to contribute $3,421 a month to get to the same place that if you had just started when you were 20, it's $300 a month, right? And that so that means that when that 20-year-old is 50, they're still only contributing $300 a month, but they're going to get to the same place, right? So I just, that slide usually makes all the young people in the room go, oh my goodness gracious, right? Because it's so drastically different if you save young. And I'm so grateful. We've got a guy on our tour who's a few years older than me, and we were both on it last time. And I remember we were in the dressing room really early on. I was 23, and he took me under his wing, and he looked at me, and he said, put every dollar you can into that 401k, Sonny Jim. Like you have to do it now. And I'm so glad that I did, because it has made a huge difference that, you know, those 7 years now to what it will continue to earn as it goes on, even if I never work another day in my life, right? So if I never work another equity job and I never put another dollar in, all that money I was able to save and start compounding will continue to compound until I'm retired and I pull it out. So just talking about the union 401k, I think that those things are super important.
That is the most practical way someone has ever explained a 401k to me. I'm like, wow, I get it. Amazing.
Yeah. So I think that was my dad's theory too. Like, even if it's just $10 a week, if you start that when you're 20, and for me, it was like, if you start it when you're 12 years old, honey, with your, because I had a paper route and I was picking blueberries every so, you know, it's like, if you can put $10 a month starting now at 12 years old, that's going to be so much different, you know. But I think that's the mindset. Like, it's $10 just doesn't seem like it's going to make a dent, or $100 doesn't seem like it's going to make a dent. But what you just described with the compound interest over a long period of time, that makes a massive difference.
100%. And I think the way that a 401k works, right, is you set a percentage of your paycheck to be taken out and put into the 401k. So you book Wicked on Broadway, the company manager is going to send you a form and say, what percent do you want, right? And so what I always tell people is I say, pick a percentage. If you don't want to like really do the math and think about, well, how much do I need to max out my all those types of things. If you don't want to think about it, just pick a percentage, pick 10%, pick 5%. Because what happens is that money, just like if you automate the savings, what we were talking about earlier, that money comes out before the money hits your checking account. So what I always tell people is I say, pick a percentage, live with it for a month. What is that paycheck feeling coming in feel like to you? Do you feel like you're strapped for cash at the end of the month? Do you feel like you've got a surplus that you're like, actually, I have more money than I, you know, what am I going to do with this? And adjust from there. If you say, I'm going to do 20%, Kyle told me, and then at the end of every week, you're like, eesh, I'm barely paying my credit card bill at the end of the week, then lower it. You know, you'll drive your company manager crazy, but you're allowed to change the percentage whenever you want. So it's the type of thing on a sliding scale that you just live with for a month or two and you say, do I notice this? And I think most of the time when you are on one of those jobs that's paying you a decent amount of money, you can say, you know what, I don't really notice that $10 or that $100 or whatever you're putting in, I don't really notice that it's gone, you know? And then when you log into your 401k at the end of a year or two doing that type of job and you see how much money you've been able to sock away, it's just, it's an incredible thing to be able to do on the union I have a few other quick things if people like want to know about the equity union and how it works. So you'll hear a lot of people talking about 401ks and getting your company match. That's like a big thing that you hear, a phrase. They'll say, if you put in 3%, the company will match 3% or 5% or whatever it is. The kind of cool thing about the union is that if you're on a 401k paying job, the producer's putting in 3% for you no matter what. So you don't have to contribute. You can contribute 0% or 10% or whatever. And no matter what, the producer is putting that 3% in for you. So even if you can afford to contribute to your 401k, you're still getting money put in there every single week for you on behalf of the producer. So it's important to know that if you choose not to contribute, you still have money in that 401k. And that brings me to my second thing, which is that everyone who is on one of those types of jobs needs to log into their 401k and see where their money is going and what it's doing and what the balance is. Because I have a lot of people who come out on tour and say, I'm not putting any money in, so why would I even log in or look at this thing? But the truth is that this account exists in your name and the producer money's going in there. So you have money on the line somewhere that you're not looking. And the way that all of these retirement accounts work, and this is important for everyone to know, is that they are going to be invested into funds or some way somehow into the stock market, maybe some bonds as well, but they are going to be invested in the stock market. So it's important for everyone to know that this money isn't going into the savings account like what we talked about at the beginning. It is being invested into the market. But the way that the 401k works is that the union provides you with different funds and different options of what types of stocks and what risk level and all those types of things. And I know that that can be a little overwhelming, but the first thing to do is just to get yourself logged in and just start looking at, okay, I've got this much money and it says it's going into this fund, and you can click on the fund and you can look at, what am I actually investing in? What is this money going into? And that might be a bigger can of worms for a personal coaching or type of thing. The little tidbit is just signing in, because I really do have people who come out on tour for a year or two and they say, how do I check how much money I have in my 401k? And I just go, you haven't logged in yet? You're like, and that money's being invested in this fund that you haven't even picked, because the union selects a fund for you if you don't make a choice, which is great, because they're saying, even if no one does any work, we're still going to do the minimum amount of work for you. But it's just so important to take sort of control over what's going on with your money and all of those things. So that's my equity 401k sort of spiel.
That's great, wow. Kyle. That brings me to, if folks want to work with you, either in a group setting, come and do a, you know, a class for them, or personal coaching, how can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, I'm just sort of starting out in terms of like actually really getting into this. You know, I've sort of grabbed coffee with a friend, that type of thing in the past, but I'm just really starting in the past year to teach these classes and to really work with people one-on-one. So I would say, you know, just email me. My email is kylertimson@gmail.com or kylertimson on Instagram. You can DM me and we can get, you know, connected. And I do have, you know, kylertimson.com. I have a website that you could send me an email through if you want to go through my actor website. But yeah, sort of any of those things, and we can start sort of connecting and we can get you linked up to a class or a coaching or anything like that.
Kyle, thank you so much. I feel like, just like you were saying about like ripping that Band-Aid off, like let the sun shine in. I love that you acknowledge that there might even be some embarrassment with how people have managed their money or the debt they might be in or how they might have gotten in that debt. But like the sooner you can just let the sun shine in on it, get some support around it, start making a plan, I just feel like it's so, so huge and so empowering. And especially for actors, because so much of that freelance actor lifestyle, so much of it's out of your control anyway, that if you can start having this part of your life get a little bit more under control, it just feels really good and really powerful. So thank you so much, Kyle. This was really, my mouth was hanging open for a lot of it.
Yes, thank you. And there's so much more. For all my union members out there, we could get into the equity pension and how that works, because everyone who's working a 401k job has a pension, and we could get into that. And also, like you sort of said, and we ran out of time, but you know, a Roth IRA or an IRA, you hear these terms, they're basically like personal retirement accounts. So if you're not on that equity 401k job, you could be doing this on your own. So if you are out of debt and you maybe want to be socking a little away for retirement, even if you're at your survival job, you're in between jobs, those things are options. So if you want to look into those terms and figure it out for yourself, or you want to come to a class or do a coaching with me, but you know, there are retirement options out there for people who aren't on a national tour or a Broadway job that we could get into too. So, you know, it's an ever expanding topic and we could get more into the and how the investing works and stuff too. But I think just even those three or four basic things we talked about can make such a huge difference for everyone. And I'm just constantly saying, even if you just do that one little thing, please, it'll make such a big difference. So that's the mission for me. So thank you so much for having me here. And I hope people enjoy listening to a less traditional theater podcast than probably what they're used to.
Oh, I love it. That. Thank you, Kyle.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed today's episode, take a screenshot and tag us on Instagram at BeWay Vocal Coach. Share this episode with a friend and please consider leaving us a review. And if you're ready to take your next step but aren't entirely sure what that should be, take our quiz. We'll strategize with you to outline a roadmap to your unique goals. Visit BeWayVocalCoach.com/take the quiz. We can't wait to hear your story and help you take the next step in your career.